You are listening to Episode 1 of Quarter Share, a trader's tale from the golden age of the Solar Clipper. Written and read by Nathan Lowell. Chapter 1, Neris, 2351, August 13. Call me Ishmael. Yeah, I know, but in this case it's really my name. Ishmael Horatio Huang. My parents had an unfortunate sense of humor, but had they known what I'd wind up doing with my life, they might have picked a different name. Richard Henry Dana, perhaps. Why they picked Ishmael Horatio is a long and not terribly interesting story that begins with, my mother was an ancient lit professor, and it ends with my being saddled with these non-sequitur monikers. That story was over 18 Stanyards before the two Neris Company security people showed up at my door with long faces and low voices. Perhaps it was their expression, and perhaps it was that they were looking for me and not Mom, but I knew it wasn't good. I was pretty sure they hadn't come to drag me away. I'd never been a troublemaker, not like some of the other kids in the university enclave. They had come for me, though, to tell me she was dead. It was a sort of an unreal kind of kick-in-the-gut feeling. I knew they were telling me the truth, but I couldn't quite grasp it. Flitter crash, the tall one said. It happens. Not a lot, but enough. You know it can happen, but it always happens to somebody else. It wasn't even her flitter, but Randy's, her boyfriend. He was dead, too, the short one said. They spoke to me gently, and their voices just washed past me. Nothing really seemed to stick. They finally left me alone. 18 Stanyards was old enough to live on your own on Neris. I wasn't taken to juvie hall or put into foster care or anything. That night I just kept walking from room to room. I woke up sprawled on the couch next morning, but I didn't even remember sitting down. As bad as that night had been, morning brought something worse. Lawyers. We continued our perambulations, and the next turn, a wizened old woman sat behind a heavy bench and worked the most amazing patterns into a piece of leather. Bev and I stood with several others, spellbound as she pierced, punched, pounded, and laced the lovely natural brown leatherwork. Her gnarly-looking fingers moved with an amazing speed and grace. In what seemed like only a few moments, she lifted the leather from her workbench and displayed a finished belt to the crowd's appreciative applause, before hanging it carefully in a long rack with several dozen others. She fished under the bench and brought out another length of supple, creamy brown. The scent of it cut through even the smell of the crowd. I was drawn to the rack of belts and began fingering through them. Bev stood close behind me and admired them as well. "This is spectacular work," she said softly. She took one and flexed it several times, and this leather is amazing. The lady behind the bench noticed us looking but didn't interrupt us. Beverly turned to her and asked, "How much?" The woman flickered a glance in our direction and smiled. "Are you serious or just curious?" she asked with a pleasant lilt in her voice. "Serious," responded Beverly. 20 creds each, 50 for 3, the old woman said quietly, working a spiderweb pattern into the surface of the new leather on her bench. Bev grunted. "Interesting, but not that interesting," she said. 100 creds for 10? The old woman grinned. "Child, my husband would beat me if I took so little. You cannot ask that of a frail old woman such as myself, but perhaps I could sell you 7. She continued smoothly working the leather without looking up. 8, replied Beverly after a single heartbeat. "Sold," the woman replied as she put the finishing touches on the spiderweb. Looking up, she gave a brief nod in my direction. "Your boy toy can have the same deal if he likes," she added, obviously talking to Bev and not me. I blushed. Bev smirked. "How about it, Ish? You want to buy a new belt?" In the end, Bev and I bought 8 belts each. They were exquisite and weighed less than a kilo total. I was still chuckling as I got to the berthing area and started changing into civvies. They were getting kind of not worn exactly. Tired, maybe. My good boots weren't all that good compared to some of the footwear I'd seen in the last 5 months. My jacket was a little more than an outdated windbreaker. My pants were what my mother called good solid trousers. Bleh. I put them on because that's all I had. I had a sudden insight into why people dressed up when they changed into civvies. After months of ship suits, as nice and practical as they were for what we did on a daily basis, putting on civvies ought to be something special. If I got new clothes, I'd have to get rid of these or take the hit on my mass allotment, but I understood why so many people did exactly that. I saw the boy toy belt hanging in the back of the locker then, and with a sudden burst of daring, I stripped out my old, perfectly adequate belt and buckled on the supple leather, with its gold metal and black dragon. I looked at myself in the mirror, and, if I were perfectly honest, it looked a tad out of place. It didn't go with the rest of the outfit at all. It did, however, go with me. So I kept it on, scooped up the cargo duffel that Pip and I had packed the night before, slammed my locker, and headed for the cargo lock. I got there just after 0700. There was a crowd gathered already. I walked up to see what they were looking at and burst out laughing. When we first got the grav pallet for Mr. Cotton, I could see why it had been slated for salvage. It was pretty torn up. It would only lift about half its rated capacity. For our purposes, that was fine, since its rated capacity was in kilotons. We only needed to carry a few dozen kilos and style points. The pallet was now painted a matte black, and the top, where it had been heavily scarred by dropped loads and untold cargo calamities, was now covered with a uniform layer of pristine gray skid grid, the same nubbly rubbery matting that they laid down on cargo entries and engineering spaces where good footing was important. Along the skirting on all four sides, someone had stenciled McKendrick Mercantile Cooperative in a gray paint that matched the skid grid. Judging from the gray smudges on Biddy Murphy's cheek, I knew who'd done that. The black told me where Pip had found wet paint the day before. There was already a stack of gear on the pallet, including a basket with the banner and table coverings. I added my duffel to the pile, and we all stood there looking at it for a moment before Roan, the morning booth manager, took the tow handle and slid the pallet out of the lock. I stood there watching them go for a moment. I didn't really know what I felt. This crazy group of people going off on a great adventure that was no more exotic than a yard sale. The gray hairs were having as much fun as the kids. It was made all the more surreal when I thought that what they do in real life, when they're not selling trinkets at flea markets, is sailing a deep space leviathan between the stars. That wasn't exciting because that was just their job. You better hurry, Ishmael, they'll leave you behind. I turned to see the captain standing there beside me, looking at the parade streaming out of her ship and across the orbital's dock. "Aye, sir, by your leave," I said, saluting for what might have been the first time since signing the articles. The captain smiled at me, returned the salute, and said, "Carry on, Mr. Wang, carry on." As I stepped out through the lock, I swear I heard Lois laughing. Thanks for listening to Episode 17 of Quarter Share, a trader's tale from the golden age of the solar eclipse.